Hey, and welcome to the Humanity Church Podcast. So excited that you're here. We hope that you enjoy this week's talk and it really connects to your life in a meaningful way. If you're live in the Pomona area, we would love to have you at one of our gatherings at 10 a.m. or at one of our Humanity groups that meet all throughout the week, all over the city. If you want more information about our community, you can go to www.humanitychurch.com or download our app on your phone on Apple or Android. If you like what you're hearing here and want to continue to support the ongoing work at Humanity, you can text the word Humanity Church, one word, to 77977 and give back financially in just about 10 seconds. Hey, and here's this week's talk that was given live at our Sunday gathering at Humanity Church.
We're starting a brand new series today called Not My God, and we've been through some really awesome series this summer and took some time to speak directly with what's going on culturally and where we're at as a community the last few weeks. But I'm really excited about this series to take a look at who God is to us. See, it's interesting that even as we say the term God, it's problematic to just start out with talking about who God is, because that word is so multifaceted that when we're in conversation with one another and I say God and you say God and we're having a conversation about God, we have so many different images about what that means and who God is to us. For example, when I'm talking to someone, I just say, yeah, you know, God, I don't know what they're thinking about. I'm clear about what I'm thinking about. I have no idea what they're thinking about. I mean, their image could be like Vishnu, a blue god with multi-hands and a crown on. Their god could be trees and nature when you talk about God. For some, when you say God, it's just like a spirit out there, an energy force field around there. For others, God is like an old white man with a giant beard in heaven with lightning bolts in his hand. So we actually have to start by defining terms, even when we have a conversation about who God is, because when we just say the word, there's all kinds of images that come up. And even when we talk about the God of the scriptures, the God that is kind of known as the God of Jesus and the God of the Christian faith, God actually never gives us an image of himself. That would be helpful, right? To know actually who is this God that we're supposed to worship and give our life to and engage with and be in relationship with. But the fact of the matter is that there's actually no image of God given here. So just pause for a minute and think. If you're a praying person, if you're a person who claims to be in a relationship with God, what is the image that you have when you pray? Who is it that you pray to? And it's interesting how people answer that question, because even people who grew up with a faith context and have a similar idea about who God is all answer that question differently of who the God is in their mind when they are praying to him. My guess is that if we went to every single person at Humanity and said, hey, draw me a picture of who God is, like what's the image that you pray to when you pray or when you worship, that we would probably have 217 different images here at Humanity Church, because every single one of us has a different picture of who God is. In fact, today we're starting something unique for this series. Our creative team, led by Kate Shipp, has gotten together, and they have some really unique ways to interact with this series. One of the things that we're asking you to do, both artists and those who claim to not be artists, sometime between now and the next 6 weeks, we're actually going to ask you to create an art piece of who God is to you. Like when you pray, what is the image? Now, I know for some of you that freaks you out, like, I'm not an artist, I don't do that. But even if you're like, hey, I'm gonna do one of those old school, like, fourth grade collages, I'm gonna get a magazine out and cut pictures out, glue stick, right? That's fine. If you're an actual artist and you're like, hey, I wanna actually create a beautiful piece with that, we'd love to have you do that. We would actually love to have your kids involved. This week, we're gonna go home with Colin and Jackson and just give them some markers and just say, hey, who is God? I actually have no idea. I imagine he'll look something like Cookie Monster, but I'm excited to actually see like what my kids have developed in their short lifetime of the image of who God is. And so by the time this talk is over, you're going to have an email in your inbox with a link to upload those images, and we're going to create a digital gallery of what God looks like to the people in our community. What is the physical image that we have of God when we pray to him? Now, I'm actually not interested in spending 6 weeks of a theological debate over what God looks like. That seems futile, it seems irrelevant, it seems insignificant to what's going on in the world around us. But what I am interested is having a conversation around the metaphors that we have developed for God and how we actually relate to God. and how we have developed certain cultural images and personal images of who God is that may actually distract us from connecting to the God who actually loves us and is authentic with us in the middle of that. That we might look at all the images of God that we've picked up along our lifetime and question them for a moment, or at least look at them in light of what the scriptures say about God so that we might fine-tune our image of who God is to us. But let me back up before we even go to that conversation. See, it's interesting what we do know of God in the scriptures. John 4:24, a verse that we talk about quite often, says, God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship him in spirit and truth. See, what we do know about God is that he is spirit. And what we know about spirit is that spirit is invisible. That we cannot see God, we cannot touch God, we cannot smell God or taste God. That would be odd. But we can't do it. It's not a physical entity that we can engage with in any space. So we know that he is invisible. Now, this may seem like a weird foreign concept, but this actually should not be a foreign concept to you. Even those of you who are atheist and have not yet connected to Jesus, this should not be a foreign concept of interacting with spirit on a regular basis, because the fact of the matter is that every single one of us are both spiritual and physical beings. That there is an aspect to us, yes, that is flesh and blood, that you can look at, that you can touch, taste, see, smell, all of that. And there is a definite physical being that resides over here and over there. But at the same time, in this physical being, there lives a spirit that resides deep inside of us that is equally a part of who we are. See, we all have a spirit that resides in our body. And we actually all know, whether we think about it on a regular basis or not, that there is way more to us than just our physical being. That there is way more to us than just blood and bones and muscles, that our mind is more than just our brain functioning. We know that our mind is more than just firing off, because if that was the case, we could just develop like a brain transplant after you die, pop your brain into someone else, and you're good to go. Because we know that it's more than just a function of biology, of who we are as people. This is why when we die, we discard the body, because we're like, yeah, that's no longer useful. We don't like pop Aunt Jane in the corner and say, well, at least we got our body. We're good, right? Because we know that's not Aunt Jane over there. That's just the physical being that held her spirit while she was here. And every single relationship that you are in with someone is an interaction with spirit. It is my spirit connecting to your spirit and your spirit connecting to one another. And the only way that we know that is through physical expression, through our words, through our engagement with one another. This is why we say when someone's off, like when you're with someone and you're like, man, they're off today. You're not referring to their makeup, right? You're not referring to their clothes. You're referring to the spirit that's in them. You're like, man, that your spirit is off. Who you are over there internally seems off in the middle of this. Our physical bodies express what our spirit is longing to engage or experience in the world. This, by the way, is why sex is never just a physical act. There is always some type of an emotional, spiritual connection involved with it. Every single time, because we know that when that happens, we connect spirit to spirit, not just body to body. And when it comes to God, it isn't some foreign experience with spirit that we're not used to. It's the same that we interact every single day, almost. Because the reality is that while God is spirit, God clearly does not have a physical body. God clearly doesn't walk around. There's not like an address that we can mail things to him. He doesn't exist physically on this earth. But just like every other God, or every other spirit, excuse me, just like every other spirit, we know who he is based on his interactions with us. We know who he is based on how he engages with us in everyday life, whether we're aware of it or not. And there are a few ways that people actually come to understand who this spirit God is, who is so powerful and engaging us on a regular basis. The first way that people connect to God is through the scriptures. That God actually says, hey, I've given you my word that I have breathed my spirit into them. And so when you read through the scriptures, you're actually engaging with the spirit of God, with his voice speaking into your voice. And so that's like a very primal way to connect to who God is and connecting to his voice. The other way that we know who God is through our own lived experience. That for many of us, we can actually look back on our lives and say, that clearly was a divine intervention. That clearly was God moving in my life. That can only be described as a miracle, that this thing took place, or that God interacted with me in this way. And so we can look back on our lived experience and say, I can clearly see how God has shown up time and time again in certain ways. The other way that we connect to God is others. Because if God is spirit, he also says that he resides in those who follow him. And so when we interact with one another who are followers of Jesus, who are representations, who are ambassadors of God, we actually get to interact with a part of who he is. And there are people, as followers of Jesus, we represent the spirit of God that lives within us every single time we interact with the world around us. Now, here's the problem. Is that we engage the scriptures, we engage our lived experience, and we engage other people who claim to represent him, and then we make interpretations of God based on how we have connected to those three areas. That we make assumptions about who God is based on our engagement with the scriptures, based on our lived experience, and based on other people who claim to represent him in this. And then we form in our imagination based on our interpretation of that who he is, what we can expect from him, how we should relate to him. And we see this time and time and time again. I mean, even the term him and father carries so much weight to it for so many of us. Because even when I say him, referring to God in masculine pronoun, there's like a tension for some people around that. For others, there's a comfort in that. For others, they hear him and it's like, man, that's so powerful and strong. And for others, it's like, man, I'm afraid and I lack trust in that area. For some, when I say God is father, for some, that's warm and nurturing and powerful and a force to be drawn to. For others, it is a push away because of their lived experience and because of other people that claimed to represent God to them in their lives. So even the metaphors as simple as him and father carry so much baggage to them. So even when we say God is a father and he loves you, we may not even be talking about the exact same thing. We may not even be having the exact same image in those moments. But here's the thing. If we are committed to having a powerful connection with God, then we will always be in a space of challenging how we see him, how we perceive him, how we actually engage him in real life. Not challenging what he said about himself, not challenging his promises, or not challenging what he has already declared to be true, but challenging everything that we've picked up along the way. But challenging all the images that the culture has told us, that we have picked up, that other people have placed on us, and we will at least be willing to engage, is this an authentic image of who God is and the God that I long to follow? Have you ever experienced God one way, and then the next minute, you're expecting him to show up that exact same way, and then he doesn't? Isn't that strange, right? That sometimes God shows up in one aspect, and we're like, oh, cool. Great, now I know who God is and how I can interact with him and what I should expect from him. And the next moment you're like, who are you, right? Where did you go? Where did Magic Santa God go, right? I like that God, right? Now you're showing up as like mean uncle over here. I don't understand what's happening right here. Can we go back to this image of God in this space over here? See, because there has been this story, this has been the story of God over and over and over and over again all throughout the scriptures. See, because people have an expectation of how God is going to show up, and when he doesn't, they're either disappointed or confused or become bitter. See, even when Jesus showed up on the scene, he was actually not recognized as God. He was not actually recognized as Messiah, because people had all kinds of images around what the Savior of the world was supposed to look like and what he was supposed to do. And when he didn't show up to fit that mold, they were like, clearly you are not who you say you are. See, because the Messiah was supposed to be a political figure. He was supposed to show up as a politician and to lead the Jews into political power and rule. And so when Jesus was basically like, you know, my political policies are this: pay your taxes, and I don't really care about anything else, yeah. Right? I mean, that's essentially his policy here. And so when he didn't show up saying, yeah, let's go get Caesar, and you know what's going on with the emperor, let's go take him on, they're like, no, this isn't who I was expecting. They were expecting also him to be a race reconciler, Because the Jews were treated as less than. They were seen as dirt. They were seen as slaves and servants. And when he showed up and he was like, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to love our enemies. And when he said, you know what? When they ask you to walk 1 mile, which is legal in this culture, what I want you to do is walk 2. They were like, hold on. That's not what we had in mind over here as to how you were supposed to show up in this. Others were like, hey, you're supposed to get with our religion, Jesus. Like, we have the rules, we're sacrificing doves, bring a goat, whatever you need to do. Why aren't you doing this? And then he comes in and he's like, you're changing money in the church? And he starts throwing over tables. They're like, clearly this guy is not what we ordered. It's not who we expected. So even when Jesus shows up on the scene and he's like, hey, I'm here, I'm God. They're like, nope, not interested in this type of a God. He was actually crucified because people could not actually get the image of who God was supposed to be out of their minds. And had Jesus actually lined up with who they wanted him to be, he could have never actually fulfilled his mission. He would have been weak and another political figure in history. But this is what happens to God over and over and over again, all throughout the scriptures. Is that people are expecting one thing, and then God shows up a whole other way, and they're like, this isn't who I expected. I love this moment in 1 Kings chapter 19, starting in verse 7. Elijah, this prophet, had just had this massive showdown with tons of the followers of this god Baal, and he had basically rained down fire and proven their god to be false, and now the queen of the land is out to kill Elijah, and he's now sitting in a hole, hiding, going like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. My life's about to fall apart. And he cries out to God, and this is what takes place to him. It says, the angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you. So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went to a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I have been very zealous for the Lord Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too. And the Lord said, go out and stand in the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. And then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he put his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. And then the voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? See, I think this is such a powerful moment. It's a metaphor that's used over and over and over again, because what Elijah needed was for God to show up in some major way. I mean, if anyone needed God to show up in a fire or a flood or an earthquake, this is the dude. I mean, he was literally being hunted down. And so he could have used a giant wind that came, right? He could have used an earthquake to destroy everything around him. He could have used a fire. That would have actually been completely fine. And it would actually have solved all of his circumstances, because he's just like, you know what? You know what would be awesome right now, God? Fire, wipe them all out. You know what would be awesome? Earthquake, let's just have some canyons fall in on them. We'll be good. Let's just have a wind destroy in their entire village. And it would have solved all of his circumstances, and God would have actually probably been justified in showing up like that, because the people following him would be a little like poopy face over there towards Elijah. And he would have been completely justified in completely destroying all of the enemies of God. But it would not have transformed the lens through which Elijah sees God. It would have transformed all of his circumstances and make life much easier for him. But Elijah would never actually have who he believes God to be transformed. He actually needed a brand new image of who God was to send him into the next season that God have for him. See, how often do we expect, long, desire, beg for God to show up in power and strength and might, in wind and fire and earthquakes and waves? And sometimes he does. Many, many times in my life has he shown up in beyond powerful ways that I can only describe as the great Jehovah God, who shows up in the most powerful ways. But when we are expecting the wind wind and the earthquake and the fire and a still small voice shows up, how many times are we disappointed? How many times do we feel like we've been let down? Because you didn't show up the way I needed you to show up. Because you didn't show up the way I wanted you to show up in that place. And so many times we find ourselves there where God is just whispering into our soul, saying, hey, I actually got everything you need if you just calm down. Except we're disappointed and we leave jaded because this just was not the image that God was supposed to show up as. And there are so many times where we miss where God just shows up so small in the best of ways, where he shows up as a tender touch or a whisper or as a gentle embrace or as a hand over a wound rather than the earthquake or the fire or the wind. And we miss him in those moments. But then there's other moments where God completely blows that mold. See, it would be nice to just be like, okay, good, got it. God's a whisper. All right, whisper, right? There are other times where he shows up completely distinct from that. In Job chapter 30, Job is going through a heck of a time. You thought we're going through a heck of a time right now. Job's like losing everything. He's actively in the process of losing his family, losing his fortune, losing everything around him. And he basically comes to God and he's like, where are you? Where are you? I could use, same thing, like I could use the earthquake and the fire and the flood right now. Could you just come and fix this, right? And God does not show up in a still small voice this time. This is how God shows up to Elijah in probably one of the most profound passages of scripture. In Job chapter 30, it says, I, the Lord, spoke to Job out of the storm, and he said, who is this that obscures my plans with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the earth foundations? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimension? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it on where its footing set, or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy. Who shut up the seas behind the doors when it burst forth from the womb? When I made the clouds its garments and wrapped it in thick darkness? When I fixed limits for it and set its doors and bars in place? When I said, that is as far you may come and no further. Here is where your proud waves halt. Have you ever given orders to the morning or shown the dawn its place, that it might take the earth by the edges and shake wicked out of it? The earth takes shapes like clay under a seal. Its features stand out like those of a garment. The wicked are denied their light and the uprised arm is broken. Have you journeyed to the springs of the depths of the sea or walked the recesses of the depth? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the deepest darkness? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all of this. What is the way to the abode of light? And where does the darkness reside? Can you take them to their places? Do you know the paths to their dwellings? Surely you know, for you are already born. You have lived so many years. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow or seen the storehouses of hail, which I reserve for times of trouble or days of war and battle? What is the way to the place where the lightning is displaced, or the place where the east winds are scattered over the earth? Who cuts a channel for the torrents of rain and path for the thunderstorm to water and land where no one lives, an uninhabited desert, to satisfy a desolate wasteland and make it sprout with grass? Does the rain have a father? Who fathers the drops of dew? From whose womb comes the ice? Who gives birth to the frost from the heavens when the waters become hard as stone, when the surfaces of the deep are frozen? Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades? Can you loosen Orion's belt? Can you bring forth the constellations in their seasons or lead out the bear with its cubs? Do you know the laws of the heaven? Can you set up God's dominion over the earth? Can you raise your voice to the clouds and cover yourself with a flood of wonder? Do you send the lightning bolts on their way? Do they report to you? Here we are. Who gives the ibis wisdom or gives the rooster standing? Who has wisdom to count the clouds? Who can tip over the water jars of the heavens when the dust becomes hard and the clods of earth stick together? Do you hunt the prey for the lionesses and satisfy the hunger of lions when the crouch of their dens and lie in wait in the thick? Who provides food for the raven when its young cry out to God and wander about for lack of food? You get the gist here. See, I wonder how often we look at our circumstances and just assume that God is powerless. We just look at everything going on in us and God is way too small to handle this. I mean, God is completely powerless. He is not big enough for the needs that I have. And so we find ourselves overwhelmed by how small we imagine God to be. And let me just tell you, I don't know if I've ever, ever, ever been in a season of my life where this creeps in more than ever. Where I just imagine that God is completely incapable of handling the circumstances around me. I look at everything going on with COVID and I'm like, you got this, God? I look at people like attacking one another and becoming vile towards one another that were friends a month ago and now are literally spewing hate at each other over someone who will rule a land for 4 years. And I'm wondering, God, where are you in this? I look at economics dropping and politics going crazy and people fighting over how we become unified over race. I mean, let me just be honest. As a pastor, I have lost my faith more than once over the last 8 months because God seems to be way too small at times. And we look at the bigness of our circumstances and the bigness of the problems around us, and we assume he can't handle it because he's too small. And then God shows up like Job and just says, hey, where were you when the foundations of the earth were laid? Not out of shame, but just out of a, hey, let's not forget who actually created this here. See, whether we are calling him too weak or whether we are expecting him to show up big, whether we are surprised by the whisper or whether we stand in awe of the bigness of who he is as creator, we are oftentimes in the process of making him too small. We are oftentimes in the process of limiting what's possible, of diminishing who he is and what he is capable of in our life. And every time we demand that God needs to show up some way, we miss the bigger version of God that he is actually interested in showing up us with us in. See, and I would say this, that none of us actually do this consciously, right? We're not actively diminishing God's image. Oftentimes, if it was us, if we say, hey, do you want to follow a God that you made up and that you actually set the limits for and that's like within your means? I would imagine most people would say no. Yet we find ourselves more times than not desiring, expecting, demanding that God show up one way or be something for us when he's actually not interested in being that God for you right now. So why do we do it? Why is this like a default of ours? See, as much as we say at times we want God to be out of our box, that we want God to blow the lid off our thinking and to blow the lid off of what we could imagine to be and to blow the lid off of the possibilities that we see in front of us, the fact is that human beings are actually addicted to manageable. That human beings are actually quite drawn to the predictable in life. The things that we can expect on and count on and schedule and know exactly what is going to happen. And even if it is painful predictability, we will choose a predictability that produces pain over and over and over again over a circumstance that is completely out of our control, unmanageable, and have no idea what's going to come next. I mean, just think about it. How many times have we actually said, you know what, I really want to lose weight? And then we're like, but I love tacos. And so we're like, hey, I will take the predictability of like being sick and being feeling gross and being lack of energy over this desire to actually move towards health. How many of us are like, you know what? I really want a healthy marriage, but I'm actually really addicted to the dysfunction of the same fight that we have over and over and over again that never changes. How many of us actually say, I want peace, but then we actually choose the same chaos over and over again because at least the chaos is predictable. At least when I post this, I know this is what's going to happen. At least when I say this, I know this is what's going to happen. Even if everyone's going crazy, at least I know that crazy looks like. So I can handle the crazy. But peace, that's going to require a whole new skill set that I'm not too sure I'm interested in. That's going to require a whole new way of relating to God that I don't know if I'm interested in the middle of this. See, because if God fits my box, then I am able to manage him and I am never surprised and I'm never let down. Because while he may not be the God that I need, he's at least the God that I can manage in this moment. And at the end of the day, the human race, we're a bunch of control freaks. Because this is just the way we learn to survive. That if I can keep them under control, if I can keep me under control, if I can keep it under control, and especially if I can keep God under control, then everything will be fine. And then we wonder why we don't actually experience the miraculous taking place all around us. I mean, you just even take, like we said, the image of Father. See, growing up, we develop an image of Father from our physical fathers, and we know exactly what we could count on from our fathers, and we knew exactly what we could not count on from our fathers. And so we develop a relational pattern. Our parents are one of the first places that we learn how to mitigate disappointment. It's the first places we learn, yeah, I know Dad's good for this, but I don't dare ask him for this. I know he'll show up for me physically and give me the money I need, but he's not going to actually show up emotionally for me, so I'm just not going to get too emotionally detached. I know he'll show up emotionally for me when it's convenient for him, but I'm not actually going to rely on him for any of my physical needs. I know that he loves me, and at the same time, he hits me, so I'm going to try to figure out how to manage this disappointment over here. And so even our image of Father gets so smushed down and manageable in the working that we don't ask, we get strong, we expect, it's predictable. So then we transfer that label onto God and we do the exact same thing. I can trust you with my heart, but I cannot trust you with my money. I can trust you with my pain, but I cannot actually trust you with my joy. I might be willing to trust you with my future, but you do not get to touch my past. And so we start limiting what's possible with God. And we pick up on all the convenient images of God that can be dysfunctional yet predictable. And that's what we're going to be taking a look at for the next few weeks. All the predictable and dysfunctional images of who God is. For some of us, God's become like a resident police officer who's really more interested in putting up rules and regulations and putting up stop signs and running tickets for you when you get it wrong. See, would it be okay if God was actually not interested in your compliance, but he was actually interested in just being with you? See, for some of us, God shows up like this grand old white man in the sky. Would it be okay if God, I don't know, was Chinese or black or Latino or multicultural? And what if God was actually modern? What if he didn't have to be just met in an ancient story, but he could be met right here and now? What if God was actually more interested in meeting you in your future than experiencing him in his past? See, for some of you, your image of God is just meek and mild and nice. But would it be okay if God was powerful and passionate? For some of you, God just demands absolute perfection from your life. He just needs you to get the A. Would it be okay if he actually also wants your mess along with the perfection? For some of you, God is just like waiting to get you off into heaven so that you do not have to endure this mess here. What if God was actually more interested in the work that you were doing here and now than some mansion that he was going to give you later? See, for some of you, God is an angry, disappointed parent. And you're constantly trying to prove how you're worth it and trying to get his affirmation and trying to prove how good you are for him so that he might love you. Would it be okay if his love actually can't be swayed either way and he pours it out freely? See, it's shocking at times to realize how small we've made God, how much we've just minimized what he longs to do in us. You know, it's interesting that when God gave Moses, the Ten Commandments. You think about like 10, like you only got 10. Get the big ones in there, right? It's interesting that number 2, like not even number like 10, number 2 was do not make an image of me. It was literally like, you shall have no other God before me and do not make an image of me. It wasn't even like, hey, that image is wrong. Let me give you the actual image, right? It wasn't like, hey, let me, if you're going to make an image, this is what I look like. So if you need something to pray to, you could pray to this. He actually says, don't bother. Because the second that you make an image of me, it's going to be irrelevant. Because I show up new in every circumstance, in every moment, exactly how you need. When I need to show up as fire, I show up as fire. When I need to show up as water, I show up as water, whether it's with a smoke or a donkey or striking people dead or bringing back people to life, whether it's the wind or the whisper or frogs or locusts or bringing children to the barren or comforting those who will never have children or war or peace or past or future, I will show up as I need to show up. So that sometimes might look like grace and mercy and inclusion, and sometimes that might look like anger for the sake of your future. Look, let me just tell you, if your God is Republican or Democrat, he is way too small. So if you're gonna follow Jesus to connect to the God of love, get ready for God to blow up your image of who he ought to be time after time after time, because he always, always, always shows up beyond our images and exactly what we need in the moment. Exactly what we need in the moment. And let me just say this to some of you. Some of you have picked up on images of God because people that represented him did a very poor job of it. People that were supposed to represent the God of love and grace and mercy, they actually showed up in another way. And you know, that's such a hard thing. And I get it. I get it. I can tell you there are people along my journey that were supposed to represent Jesus, and they did a really poor job of it. And I'll never actually understand why the one image of God that he actually gives us is people. The actually closest thing that God gives us to who he is one another. He actually said that we were made in his image. So if you actually want to like a semi-idea of who he is, just look to the person next to you.
Hey guys, we had some technical difficulties when recording this podcast, so we missed the ending, but this is basically the ending point of my talk here. That while some people have represented God poorly in our lives, we also have to pause and remember that we oftentimes represent God poorly to other people, and that it's not an excuse to stop following or to keep ourselves from going again with both being image bearers of God and allowing other people to represent God to us and for us. So hey, I'm excited for this series. We will see you next Sunday as we start engaging this conversation around Not My God.